Okay, imagine this. You're in court facing some pretty serious drug charges, and you decide to plead guilty, hoping for, a bit of leniency from the judge, right? A lighter sentence. But then, get this, the judge actually uses your silence at the sentencing hearing against you. They hit you with a way harsher penalty. Feels a bit like a legal trap, don't you think?
Well, that's the core issue in Mitchell v. United States. It's a case that really brings up some big questions about our Fifth Amendment rights. Today, we're diving deep into this landmark Supreme Court case, figuring out just how important it is for anyone facing criminal charges or even just navigating the legal system.
Yeah, you're right. It's a fascinating case.
Whether you're a lawyer, a law student, or just someone who's curious about how power plays out in our courts, this case is worth thinking about.
Definitely. Mitchell v. United States is really crucial if you want to understand how far the Fifth Amendment actually reaches, especially when it comes to sentencing.
Okay, so let's get into the nitty-gritty. What exactly went down in Amanda Mitchell's case?
So Amanda Mitchell, she was indicted on drug conspiracy charges, happened in Pennsylvania. Now, she was looking at some serious time, so she decided to plead guilty to two of the charges, hoping for a lighter sentence, of course. But here's the catch. She challenged how much of the drugs they were saying she was responsible for.
So she was admitting to being involved, but not to the full extent of what the prosecution claimed.
Right.
What happened next?
All right, so at her sentencing hearing, she decided to stay quiet. She invoked her Fifth Amendment right, the one against self-incrimination. You know, I plead the Fifth.
Right, classic.
But the district court judge saw this silence as her admitting to guilt for the larger amount of drugs, ended up giving her the mandatory minimum sentence, 10 years.
Hold on, she's punished for using a right that's literally in the Constitution. That doesn't seem right at all.
And that's precisely the issue that landed in the Supreme Court's lap. Did pleading guilty mean Mitchell basically gave up her Fifth Amendment rights when it came to the sentencing part? And can courts actually use that silence as proof to decide what the sentence should be?
Those are some serious questions, man. What did the Supreme Court end up deciding?
Well, the Supreme Court sided with Mitchell, big time. Made it crystal clear that the Fifth Amendment protection, that protection against self-incrimination, it sticks with you even during the sentencing phase, even after you plead guilty. Silence can't be used against you, they said.
So even after you say guilty, you can still plead the Fifth, and it holds up. That's a pretty huge win for individual rights. Can you break down how they arrived at this decision? What were the main arguments?
Okay, so the court, Justice Kennedy, wrote the majority opinion. They highlighted a few really important points. First, they looked at the actual words of the Fifth Amendment. It says protection in any criminal case, which obviously includes sentencing.
So it doesn't just vanish once you say you're guilty. Your rights are still there.
Exactly. They also brought up Griffin v. California, that case that says prosecutors can't use a defendant's silence at trial against them. The court basically said the same idea applies to sentencing as well. If you allow someone's silence to be twisted against them during sentencing, they argued, it would completely gut the whole purpose of the Fifth Amendment.
Yeah, makes sense. It's like they were laying down the law, literally, saying the right to stay silent is fundamental to our entire legal system.
You got it. The court also stressed that the burden of proof, it always lies on the prosecution. Defendants aren't obligated to help the government make their case, not even when it comes to sentencing.
It's a good reminder that even after pleading guilty, you're still innocent until proven guilty. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is there like a particular quote from the ruling that really gets that across?
There's a good one. Justice Kennedy wrote, "The concerns which justify the rule against negative inferences at trial apply with equal force at sentencing." Basically, the court's saying that the Fifth Amendment, that protection, it goes all the way.
Wow, straight to the point. So in layman's terms, silence is golden, right? Even in court. But are there any exceptions? Does this always apply no matter what?
That's a great question. It's super important to understand the finer points here. See, the court made a distinction between figuring out guilt, which happens at trial, and then deciding how severe the punishment should be, which is what sentencing is for.
Okay, so the Fifth Amendment's protection applies in both situations, but the context matters.
You got it. Mitchell doesn't mean prosecutors can't go for a harsher sentence. They still got to prove those aggravating factors on their own without leaning on the defendant's silence.
So it's like a balancing act. The defendant can stay silent, but the prosecution still has to back up their push for a tougher sentence with actual evidence. Did all the Supreme Court justices agree with this? Were there any dissenting opinions?
Oh, for sure. Two justices, Scalia and Thomas, they had some different thoughts. They wrote dissenting opinions, each with their own take on it.
So we've got these different opinions coming from the court itself. It's like a real battle of legal philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
What were the main arguments against what the majority decided?
Well, Justice Scalia, he agreed that Mitchell had the right to use the Fifth Amendment. But he thought judges should have some wiggle room, you know, some discretion. He felt they should be able to consider if a defendant is truly sorry or taking responsibility when they decide on the sentence.
So to him, silence, or the lack of it, could give some insight into the defendant's attitude about what they did.
Exactly. He also pointed out how sentencing has been done historically, how judges traditionally looked at a lot of different things when making that decision.
So it seems like he wanted a more flexible interpretation of the Fifth Amendment when it came to sentencing.
Right. And Justice Thomas, he took it a step further. He actually questioned the whole foundation of Griffin v. California, the case that originally said you can't use a defendant's silence against them at trial.
Wow, that's a pretty fundamental disagreement. What was his reasoning behind that?
Well, Justice Thomas felt that the majority in Mitchell were basically making a policy decision instead of sticking to a strict interpretation of the Constitution. He thought they overstepped their boundaries.
This really shows you how complicated it can be to interpret the Constitution,
yeah.
Right? You have to balance individual rights with what's good for society as a whole. But let's bring this back down to earth a bit. What does all this legal stuff mean for someone who's actually facing criminal charges, you know, dealing with the legal system?
That's the million-dollar question. The impact of Mitchell v. United States is huge. It reaches far and wide. It gives defendants a guarantee they can stay silent during sentencing and not worry about it backfiring. The court can't use their silence against them.
So it's an added layer of protection, even if you already admitted you're guilty.
Exactly. And remember that burden of proof we talked about, Mitchell really emphasizes that. It's the prosecution's job to prove those aggravating factors. They can't just point to the defendant's silence and call it a day.
So it makes the process more balanced. The prosecution has to actually show why a harsher sentence is necessary.
You got it. And this has a ripple effect on plea bargains, too. Defense attorneys can now tell their clients to keep quiet during sentencing without messing up a plea deal. It gives defendants more power, strengthens their position when they're negotiating.
So Mitchell affects legal strategy, not just constitutional law.
Precisely. It gives defendants more control. They can plead guilty but still protect themselves from saying something that might make their sentence worse.
We've been focusing on how Mitchell's silence can't be used against her. But what about the other way around? Can it be used for her somehow?
You know, that's a really sharp observation. It highlights a misunderstanding that people sometimes have about the Fifth Amendment. It prevents the government from saying, you stayed silent, so you must be guilty. But it doesn't flip that around and say, you stayed silent, so you must be innocent either.
So there's no silence equals innocence card to play. Makes sense. How has this ruling changed how defense attorneys approach cases like Mitchell's?
Mitchell v. United States completely changed the game for defense lawyers, especially when it comes to plea bargains and what they do during sentencing. Before this ruling, they were in a tough spot. They had to weigh the good things about a guilty plea against the risk that their client might get a worse sentence for staying silent.
Because, like we saw, some judges didn't take too kindly to that silence.
Right. But Mitchell shifted everything. Now, defense attorneys can say to their clients, look, you can admit you did it without giving them more ammo. Stay quiet at sentencing. The judge can't hold it against you.
So it's like they get to control their story even though they're pleading guilty.
Exactly. They can admit to some things but protect themselves from saying stuff that could land them a longer sentence.
So it forces everyone to really dig into the facts and make sure the defendant's side is heard.
Absolutely. It's not about guessing why the defendant's staying quiet anymore. It's about what the actual evidence shows.
Sounds like a positive step towards a fairer criminal justice system. What was the reaction like from the legal world when the Mitchell decision came out?
Well, like with any Supreme Court ruling that tackles a tough issue, you get mixed reactions. A lot of legal experts and defense attorneys, they loved it, saw it as a huge win for individual rights. To them, it showed how powerful the Fifth Amendment is, even if you've admitted you're guilty.
It's like saying, you messed up, but you don't lose your basic rights.
You got it. But some prosecutors and those who were tough on crime, they were worried. They thought this decision would tie judges' hands, make it harder for them to really figure out what kind of person the defendant is, and decide on the right sentence.
I can see their point. Sentencing isn't just about the crime itself, it's about the defendant's attitude, if they're really sorry, and all that.
Exactly. Those who weren't happy with the ruling worried that defendants might try to game the system. admit they're guilty, but then stay silent on purpose so they don't have to reveal things that could get them a longer sentence.
So it's this constant struggle, right?
Yeah.
Protecting individual rights while also making sure the justice system works, that it punishes people fairly and keeps society safe.
You nailed it. Mitchell v. United States really brought that struggle to the forefront, made everyone think about these fundamental questions. It's a case that's still being debated and is shaping how lawyers approach cases even today.
Seems like this case is far from over. Even though the Supreme Court made a decision, its impact is still being felt. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Mitchell v. United States is more than just a case in the books. It's a real conversation starter about finding that balance, individual rights and justice, making sure the system works. And speaking of impact, how has Mitchell actually changed things in the legal world since that 1998 decision?
Well, it's been pretty huge. It really shows how important the Fifth Amendment is, how it protects people even when they've said, yeah, I'm guilty.
So it's not just some dusty old case law students have to cram for. It actually matters in courtrooms all over the country.
Exactly. And you can see its influence in a few key areas. First, it's changed the whole game of plea bargaining. Like we talked about, Mitchell gave defendants more power. They have more say in those negotiations now, knowing they can make a deal without worrying that staying silent later will bite them.
Sounds like it tipped the scales a bit. Gave defendants a stronger hand to play.
Yep. And it's had an effect on sentencing hearings, too. Judges are now super aware of the limits Mitchell put in place. They can't just assume guilt or think someone's not remorseful because they're not talking. Those sentencing decisions, they got to be based on real evidence, not on what the defendant chooses to keep to themselves.
Makes sense. Puts more pressure on the prosecution to really make their case for the sentence they want.
Right on. Mitchell basically raised the bar for prosecutors. They got to bring the receipts, even when the defendants admitted to the crime.
So in a way, Mitchell made things fairer, more transparent. It forces the system to respect the defendant's rights, even if they messed up.
I'd agree with that, but we gotta be real. Mitchell has also kicked off some debates and challenges that are still going on.
Yeah, a case this big, it's bound to ruffle some feathers. What are some of those questions or criticisms that have come up since then?
Well, one of the main criticisms, and we touched on this earlier, is that some say Mitchell kind of limits what judges can do. They argue it makes it harder for judges to get a complete picture of the defendant, you know, their character and all the little details of the crime.
Because they can't read between the lines, so to speak. They have to stick to what the prosecution presents, not make assumptions based on the defendant's silence.
Exactly. And some legal experts even say this could lead to inconsistent sentences. Like, you could have two pretty similar crimes, but the punishments end up different because one defendant spills the beans and the other clams up.
So it's about finding that sweet spot, right? Making sure individual rights are protected, but also ensuring the law is applied consistently and fairly across the board.
That's the heart of it. And then there's the whole debate about what Mitchell really means for plea bargaining. A lot of people see it as a win for defendants, but some critics say it's actually made things more complicated and drawn out.
How so?
Well, now defendants don't really have a reason to cooperate and give up info during those plea talks. They know their silence can't come back to haunt them later, and that can drag those negotiations out, make it harder to strike a deal that everyone's happy with.
I guess it could make things more adversarial, maybe make it harder to find some middle ground.
That's one way to look at it. And it could even lead to more cases going to trial, which, as anyone in the system knows, can be a huge drain on time, money, and everyone's emotions.
So, Mitchell, while it definitely strengthens those individual rights, it's also introduced some new wrinkles and challenges for the criminal justice system to deal with.
No doubt about it. It just goes to show that even when a legal decision is meant to make things fairer, there can be these unintended consequences. Things ripple out in ways you might not expect.
This conversation really highlights how the law is always in motion, always changing and adapting. And Mitchell v. United States, with all its twists and turns, is a perfect example of that.
I totally agree. It's a case that still sparks debate, shapes legal strategies, and makes us really grapple with that balancing act between individual rights and achieving justice.
So to wrap things up, let's put ourselves in the shoes of those defense attorneys and prosecutors for a second. Imagine some real-world scenarios. This will help us see how Mitchell actually plays out in practice.
Sounds good. Let's try those on for size.
Okay, first scenario. You're a defense attorney. Your client's been charged with embezzlement. They swear they didn't steal as much money as the prosecution claims, but they're willing to plead guilty to a lesser charge, just to avoid a long trial. How does the Mitchell ruling influence your approach?
Because of Mitchell v. United States, I can tell my client, look, You can plead guilty and still be protected. You don't give up your Fifth Amendment rights just by admitting you did something wrong.
So they can take responsibility without incriminating themselves when it comes to the exact amount of money they're accused of taking.
Exactly. And this gives us some bargaining power. We can say to the prosecution, my client's ready to plead guilty, but we're not agreeing to the amount you're throwing out there. You got to prove that. It's on you.
So the prosecution can't just coast on the guilty plea. They still got to do their homework.
That's right. And then at the sentencing hearing, my client can stay silent about the specifics of what went down. The judge can't twist that silence, can't say it means they're guilty of stealing the full amount just because they're not talking.
Mitchell becomes like a shield, protecting the defendant from saying something that could hurt them, especially when they're trying to work out a plea deal.
Right. And the prosecution still has to make their case. They can't just rely on the defendant's silence to fill in the blanks.
Okay, let's switch gears. Second scenario. You're the prosecutor now. You're handling a drug trafficking case. The defendant pleads guilty to possession, but they refuse to say where they got the drugs or name any accomplices. How does Mitchell affect how you handle the sentencing?
This is a perfect example of how Mitchell can make things tricky for prosecutors. I might have a hunch this defendant's part of something bigger, but I can't use their silence to prove it.
So you can't imply they're hiding something just because they're keeping their mouth shut?
Nope. Mitchell says, I gotta build my case with real evidence. Think phone records, bank statements, witnesses, things like that. I need solid proof that they were doing more than just having the drugs on them.
Forces you to really dig deep and be thorough in your investigation.
You got it. And when it comes to sentencing, I can't ask the judge to throw the book at them just because they're using their right to remain silent. I gotta focus on the facts, the evidence I've gathered, and the potential danger this person poses.
It's like Mitchell shifts the focus away from guessing what the defendant's thinking and puts it squarely on the actual evidence.
That's it. It reminds us that even when a defendant admits guilt, they still have rights, and those rights can't be ignored just to wrap things up quickly.
These scenarios really show how Mitchell v. United States has made things more complex, more nuanced. It's all about balancing the defendant's rights with making sure justice is served.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Mitchell is a testament to how important the Fifth Amendment is, how it safeguards individual liberties, even within the criminal justice system.
This has been a really insightful deep dive into Mitchell v. United States. We've covered a lot, from the specifics of the case to its ripple effects throughout criminal law.
It's been a pleasure breaking it all down with you. Hopefully our listeners are walking away with a better understanding of this landmark case and its impact.
That's the goal. And to all the legal eagles out there, whether you're studying for the bar or you've been practicing for years, remember that Mitchell v. United States isn't just some case to memorize. It's a living, breathing principle that can help your clients and inform how you approach cases. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp. We'll catch you on our next deep dive.